At the third stroke, it will be...
Well, hello and welcome to EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. In today's extra show, we'll be talking to a variety of people, experts, speakers, and the organization from the VDI Performance Summit 2020. But before we dive into this event, please allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Erik van Klaveren, and I'm your host for this episode. And with me on this event is Kees Baggerman. Kees, how was your coffee this morning?
Well, I'm still sipping away, but you pulled me into this conversation, so I still have to decide on the quality of the coffee.
Okay. So we're live recording from the floor of the Amsterdam Johan Cruyff Arena on the Login VSI Performance Summit 2020, and we found our first guest. Guest? Will you tell our listeners who you are and what you're doing here?
Yeah, so my name is Mark Platterberg, and we put together this show for today. So I'm really excited to have you guys here. And with me is my colleague, Blair.
Hey, yep, Blair Parkhill. I flew all the way in from the United States just to speak at this event and help Mark out with the event and meet everybody that's come.
And talk to our podcast, obviously.
Yeah.
So thank you, Blair.
Yeah, thank you.
But what is this event about?
So VDI is complicated, and last year we figured let's do an event about VDI in general, not biased towards Citrix or VMware, just, you know, geek out on things that we like. So we basically put together an agenda of speakers that we're interested in, and turns out there's more than 200 other people that are interested in this, and, you know, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, we've stuck with the more technical theme for this event, which we find a lot of the people that attend the event are looking for some of the up-and-coming or the latest information in VDI performance, and you know, no better way to get all that information than to come to the VDI Performance Summit.
So we just had the two keynotes, one from Ruben and the other one from Sven and myself. this is going to be an awkward question, but what was your key takeaway from those keynotes?
So, you know, if we really learned something new, I don't think that we would have been doing our jobs pretty well, but it's always interesting to see, you know, Windows Virtual Desktop, Desktop as a Service, the cloud, those things are a big thing that I took away from Ruben's session. That was the first. I don't know what you have on the second session.
Yeah. The second one was great. You know, we were revisiting the topics that we're familiar with working at VSI, but, you know, we got to realize that a lot of the people that are coming to these events, they haven't been exposed to that kind of information. So spot on with both. I also really appreciated, too, Ruben's viewpoint and kind of the prediction of the year. I've spent a lot of time in Windows Virtual Desktop over the last 4 months, and, you know, I really, that kind of resonated with me. I can't wait to hear more about it.
And this event is in the Netherlands. Is it also across the pond? It's like it's in Americas?
Absolutely. So we're doing a virtual event later in April. I don't exactly know the date. It's the beginning of April. So for everybody, you know, who can attend physically, we love it. We can get a coffee together or a beer later. But there's a lot of people worldwide that want to join. And last year, I believe we had more than 1,000 people registered for that. So we're definitely going to do that again.
Yeah. Yep, for sure.
That's an impressive number for sure. So, you know, thinking about where we stand today and what do you think will disrupt the end-user computing market? And you already, I guess, gave a glimpse of what you think, but could you kind of expand on that opinion?
Yeah. Cloud is the easy and simple answer. Watching everything kind of migrate or hybrid between, you know, on-prem and cloud is definitely, I mean, we get kind of tired of hearing it. I think we hear it so many times. But I think for me, the real breakout, again, Windows Virtual Desktop, and Windows 10 Enterprise Multi-Session. It's the first time ever in the history of, you know, of software that we've done multi-session client operating system. And, you know, when Microsoft starts to push out stuff that are groundbreaking like that, I think that's kind of an indicator of things to come.
If there is one thing your visitors have to take away, what would it be?
Well, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the constant change that we're seeing evolve in the EUC space is something that's picking up. And from what we're seeing in the enterprise as vendors to an enterprise type of audience, they're concerned about all of these changes that are happening. And having each change across the entire technology stack just means there's no time for rest. You got to get in front of it. You got to keep on doing it. So that's the one key takeaway is be prepared for that constant flow of changes. As soon as you adopt new technology, you're taking on a lot with respect to change.
This seems like a good key takeaway. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the venue.
Thank you. You as well.
So, Johan, we scoured the floor and saw someone on stage. Can you announce our guest?
Yeah, so he's a guy with a common interest for something that's really dear to me, and that's GPUs. And our guest here in the show is Thomas Poppelgaard, also known as T-Pop.
Yeah. T-Pop, welcome to our show.
Thanks, guys.
You just did a session.
Yep.
What was it about?
It was about GPUs and
surprising
VDI, but also, you know, like single sessions and tons of other things.
Yeah, because performance is kind of the main theme of this event. This is your first time on this event?
It's the first time here at Login BSI Performance.
How do you like VDI it so far?
I'm really impressed.
Yeah?
Because it's really big, yeah.
So what did impress you? You say, is there a specific thing?
It's everything is very organized and well prepared. It actually made me really nervous coming talking here.
Really? Did the Dutch make you nervous?
Yeah.
Because this isn't your first time talking, right?
No. I speak many places around the world, from EUC to actually virtual reality. I also talk other stages.
The last time we met, actually, I saw you in Malta. You were also behind our mics from a different podcast. But now you're in this one.
Yeah. I'm such an honor to be part of you guys. I really like you guys, actually, the podcast you have on here. So you're doing a really good job.
Cool.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And so you're here.
And we're just like a really young podcast. This is going to be the...
This is going to be actually the second extra episode. Yeah. So this going to be after our fourth...
Well, it's complicated, but we're young. We're really young.
That's actually only the real Facebook status you could actually have, because everything is always complicated.
So Thomas, your talk was mainly on GPUs, and we all know, or most of us know, that GPUs are quite essential nowadays in getting a better performance out of better user experience, and specifically with applications that are graphically intense or need that extra bit to get the end user really excited.
Mm-hmm.
And you explained a lot about the different types of GPUs, different types of vendors. Where are you seeing that is going? What's your opinion on what we can expect in the GPU space in, let's say, the next couple of years?
Yeah, so GPU is getting quite commoditized, you know, generalized for on-prem. And I think NVIDIA is doing a really good job, but still there's a lot of customers who are not doing it. And there's a lot of customers who are actually right now in the process of migrating to next generation data centers. But I also what I'm extremely worried about is all the customers going for cloud right now. You know, so you know, from the Microsoft customers, Windows to desktop to, you know, Citrix and VMware, everybody moving to cloud. I see extremely worrying numbers who are not putting in GPUs to the workloads because they don't have any experience about impact.
But you can order them from your cloud
workload. Yeah, but you know, they're more expensive, and then they're like, yeah, we don't need them because they're expensive. They don't even consider them in the proof of concept. And it's so extremely worrying because you're having a huge impact on your business. You know, people only look at like cost. What is the cost for business who can work faster?
Will you say that this would really disrupt the perspective if you would add them?
So it depends, right? It all depends. So you need to find out if your application needs a GPU.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. And most people actually don't look what the application. They just say, oh, we have some Autodesk applications, you know, and then we put them on for Azure, you know, for GPU. I do a lot of those projects, right?
Yeah, but you put them in those and workloads in Azure.
Yeah. But, you know, and a lot of the more like FSI, financial services and government I work with, it's all on-prem, right? But the data going to the cloud, you know, if they already do a GPU, then they know they need GPU in the cloud. But if they don't, right? So a lot of these customers who are going from prem right now to cloud, they don't do GPUs today. You know, they just take their stuff from on-prem to the cloud without hesitating to any GPU. And it's so worrying because I've seen doing GPUs doing a huge footprint for, you know, I'm not going to say any kind of application, but an application you would never imagine, you know, running GPU, they'll use GPU.
So what would be your number one advice for those customers that don't aren't aware if they would require a GPU or not?
Yeah, so actually that's what I have a lot in my first part of my sessions is the physical part. So taking a physical machine, it's actually just taking a physical laptop, workstation, run the application there, you know, look at the real-time data, you know, and then also capture data over time, right? And then real-time data is a really good helping you to understand, do I see evidence of GPU? It's the same thing like if you get hacked, right? If you got hacked, you need to look where are the traces of the things, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe that's a bad case of comparing it, but you understand what I mean, right?
Yeah, sure.
We need to, instead of taking for granted, we need to ask us why do we need it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so worried that I see every single time people, they don't understand why I need GPU.
But are most people thinking that you only need GPU on graphical intensive applications?
No. Yeah, I think that is probably the majority. Also, to be honest, most people think I only work with that, right? When they look at my profile. Oh, that guy I only work with, you know, high-end applications.
And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions because what you're seeing now is that developers creating new applications, like cloud-native applications,
Working from Linux devices also needs those computational power.
Well, applications tend to become faster, especially with machine learning and deep learning, if a GPU is present or an FPGA or some other accelerator. So a lot of applications are nowadays being built, especially with big data, to run analytics on GPUs. So it's not only from a graphical acceleration perspective anymore, it's also from a computational perspective. And that's one of the misconceptions, I think. A GPU is about graphics, and that's it. Well, it is, but we're seeing more and more applications being using some bit of acceleration from computational perspective as well. And it's not just your massive big data applications. It's potentially also like your, CAD does computation at the background as well, next to graphical acceleration. So node-die application is probably the best thing to do, but there's also, you know, there are tools to assess, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To find out what the behavior of the application is. So what kind of tools do you see in the market?
So, you know, Task Manager is a great tool in Windows 10, 2019. Process Explorer from, you know, SysInternals is also Microsoft. That works a bit more at a level. And of course, you can use a variety of many more other tools.
Well, Process Explorer is such an underrated tool, actually, by most IT technicians. You can get a lot of data out of it.
You can.
But
you can.
The most of us don't tend to use it.
No. So I'll give you an example. I went to a Dutch hospital. And it was funny, I met a guy, a scientist, and he was, call him data science, because I think that's, well, SAP scientist, okay? And he's been using about 2 years researching, actually, the behavior of SAP. And, you know, when I went in there to actually help him why they need a GPU, and I actually validated what he was seeing and researching, that SAP is really, really hungry for GPU. And nobody talks about it.
No.
Right?
Why do you think that nobody talks about?
Because it's just an ERP application.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, really.
So, and without the GPU, they saw a huge, you get impact on the business. Because when they load the data, right? And this is a hospital, right? When you have critical patients.
Huge impact on other hardware resources.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you get, the data, it means the doctors and the nurses, when they put in the data, it gets slower, right? We need the data process fast. And I think, you know, this is a great experience just where we need to get the message more out there for broad. So to be honest, I'm actually thinking about potentially something I could build to help maybe the community for this. Because how else can we educate each other? You know, this podcast is one thing,
mm-hmm.
and you guys are doing
it's
that.
It's a great thing to do.
I love it. Hit as many as possible with it. But we also need to get more people like, you know, the vendors out there talking about it.
Yeah.
Potentially SAP, right?
Well, I think, Eric, and I know you agree with me as well. I think this is a great topic to dedicate a whole podcast episode to.
Yeah, because so this is our invite to do a podcast.
You
with
have
us.
An open invite to come, to definitely come back on the podcast to specifically talk about this subject because, like you mentioned, you know, the message needs to get out there. And I think we both share an opinion that GPUs should be there for the masses. And it can help anyone. You know,
Graphics for the users.
Graphics for the users.
Exactly.
Okay, so thank you. And I hope you enjoyed the rest of this event.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, yes, I found a guy on the stage who was presenting something about performance. Could you introduce this guy?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Well, so welcome, Lee. Welcome to the EUC Digest podcast. And as Eric just mentioned, you gave an excellent presentation, an excellent talk on, well, overall performance. Can you explain, or Lee, let us first start with a brief introduction of yourself, maybe.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Okay, so my name is Lee Jeffries. I am an independent consultant working in the EUC space, primarily focusing on Citrix environments. So the presentation I gave today was, the official title was how I took a 1,000-user ZenApp environment and made it run at the speed of light.
Cool, I like that, speed of light.
Yeah. And did it went at the speed of light?
No. it was a good marketing term though for my session. I can thank Mark Plettenberg for that title. The marketing spin on it is that if a user's got an environment that's that bad, any sort of speed improvement can be considered the speed of light.
Okay. So how bad was it?
Really bad. Really, really bad. Sometimes users could log on in the morning. Sometimes they couldn't. Sometimes it would take from, you know, business start time would be 8:30, 9 o'clock. Users would finally be logged in around 10.
Okay.
So really bad, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And what was your approach to
start this project?
Okay. So this particular client brought me into health check their current environment purely because they were having P1 issues every single day. So I performed a health check, gave a report over that put in some sort of remediation steps. My biggest, I think, recommendation was pretty much to start again. But I provided a health check, and that's sort of where it sparked off from. They decided to use me to fix the issues, to come in and discuss what we did to resolve the problems.
And what were the issues on their environment?
Yeah, unfortunately, they're running everything in Azure. So a whole Citrix farm in Azure. And the performance was so poor. We had profile corruptions every single day. Some help desk people were just resetting users' profiles. Login times were sporadic. Sometimes you could log in, sometimes you couldn't. It was a pretty awful scenario. The end result of putting in the fixes was that we managed to reduce the help desk calls by 70%.
So what were you explaining? They were making use of resources in Azure, but this is just a control plane, the entire backend or also the front end, or did they have any on-premises? Was it the hybrid scenario we're talking about? Or
they were running everything in Azure.
Okay.
Absolutely everything, yeah.
And for profiling, you mentioned it. Did they use any type of application for profiling?
Yes, they were using FSLogix for profiles and Office 365 containers.
And that wasn't configured in any way?
It was configured. Unfortunately, the storage that they were providing for those containers was actually not specified correctly. So we had a lot of problems where users were logging off and their profile effectively wasn't detached correctly. So we had a lot of profile corruptions, a lot of issues like that.
So in the end, you fixed their current environment, but was there also, because you mentioned, from an ultimate point of view, you would just use a level green field and just start all over, right? Start from scratch. Was this also a scenario that would be possible, or?
Yeah, so what we actually did, we didn't have any of the IT team available to actually work on a new platform with me because they were too busy just trying to fight the fires that they were experiencing every single day. So So what we did, we decided we'd sticky plaster their current environment. We fixed most of the issues, or the big primary issues, freed up some of the team, and at that point we started user consultations to understand where the pain was, you know, where all of the pain was, and then understand the requirements moving forward so that we could design a new environment. What we ended up doing was building a whole new environment alongside the current one, and then just migrating users over to the new one.
And did you do anything with measuring performance-wise or otherwise, or user satisfaction-wise?
We did indeed, yes. So part of the process was for me to take the feedback from the users and then provide that back into the IT teams. So once that process had been done, we knew what we were doing moving forwards, but I sort of generated my own work, which caused a little bit of a political issue. So once this new environment was up and running, yes, users were happy, yes, they were more productive, but the management team asked me to, you know, prove it's better. So we used Login VSI. We did density testing before we migrated users. But then after that, we also put in Login PI so that we could measure performance live as we migrated users. So the more we loaded up, the more metrics we got, and we could just understand that actually application response times were still good no matter how many users we put across. We used ControlUp for management and automation to sort of cap processes that were causing us a lot of problems. And we also used some open source EUC monitoring. It's written by a guy called David Brett and a team of people that work with him. And we used Citrix Director. So we set up a TV in the office, put all the dashboards on that, had it auto-rotating. So it was pretty evident that actually we weren't seeing any more problems. So along with the help desk queues and the reductions, you know, we could see that the environment was performing properly.
So the stress on the help desk decreased, the user experience increased, and you could also prove this with all the metrics that you gathered from the different toolings. And you said, well, we consulted a lot of the end users as well. Did you also consult them afterwards and get to know from them firsthand on the increased user experience?
Yeah, so part of my recommendation actually to the IT team, which we did do before I left, was to have a sort of a user council meeting once a month where we just listen to the user's feedback. We don't have to do anything with it, but for me it was quite important to maintain that relationship between the end users and the IT teams.
Okay, but if you don't have to do anything with it, what's the whole point of listening to...
I think it depends.
I think it's really good to do, yeah. But in the end, you want something to do with the feedback you're getting from the solution you are giving them or bringing them or implement there.
Yeah, you're right. So depending on timescales and what the current business priorities are, you may or may not do anything with the feedback. You may... At the minimum, right, you'd expect like a support ticket or something to be opened, maybe a bit of investigation, maybe some feedback the next time you have the meeting. So you might not change anything, right? It might just be information gathering. But yeah, you are right. You need to do something.
Well, and then again, sometimes listening to, the feedback of users, but in general in life, right, just listening.
It's called shrinking.
Well, maybe. But that always helps, right? I mean, especially when there is an environment that's not performing as expected and users are constantly hammering on IT support, there is a certain time where users, well, they don't see the point anymore, right? So they just go silent and suffer in silence, right? So it's always good just to reach out and engage with the end users and, get them involved into this transitioning phases in projects, right?
I think it's the most important thing to engage your end user, your employee, in the stuff they are working with. I don't know how to do their work. I'm an IT engineer.
Yeah.
So to engage them in the process how to do work is a good starting point at first and build your solution from there.
Yeah. So Lee, what is or what was the biggest challenge? Was this technical or political?
Political. It's always political.
It's always political.
Yeah, yeah. We have so many tools available to us as architects or solution architects, engineers, anything. You have so many tools available to you to solve pretty much any problem, right? You can fix anything one way or the other. But how? how do you configure all these tools to make sure that it fixes the problem? Because they're not our problems, right? We don't have problems. We only have solutions.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Users have problems. Yeah. And I think that's where it needs to change, right? You need the architects and everyone, they need to take a little bit of ownership of these problems. It's not a help desk problem. Help desk log issues and they obtain information for you to fix. It's your problem. So I think talking to your users, engaging with what it is your business does, not only does it save you pain with your users and help you understand and do your job better, it helps the organization in the future understand the estate that they actually manage. And I use managing quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many video projects do you go to?
He's doing that with his hands.
Yeah. And how many video projects do you go to where we're doing application analysis? Why are we doing application analysis? Well, it's because things have been installed and no one writes anything down. No one documents anything. The only way we know what people use really is to actually put in tools. But you should be doing that anyway, right? That's your job.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
So yeah, I'm quite strict when it comes to talk to your users, understand their pain.
Is that your giveaway to our listeners? Or to our listener?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. If you do that, your job's easy, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy for you to design something when you understand all the requirements. The problem I have most of the time when I go into an organization is the IT department are defining the requirements.
Yeah, yeah. It's more like a technology push.
Yeah. Yeah. Cloud first.
Sounds awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for your time and enjoy the rest of the event.
Thanks, Lee.
Yes, Eric, thank you.
We're still at the VDI Performance Summit 2020, and together with me and Eric is a new guest.
Yep.
It's Sydney Lan. He's one of my colleagues at ITQ Consultancy and one of our EUC specialists. Hi, Sydney.
Hi, welcome, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, sure.
So, Sydney, how's your day until so far?
Yeah, we started early with the build of our sponsor booth, and at 9 o'clock, the first session started. Very interesting. By Login VSI self.
And, it was actually by Ruben, right? He isn't from later.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Eric Jan did the keynote, the first introduction, showed some information.
You're right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
And then Ruben, yeah.
And because the listeners aren't really aware of what we're seeing here, so we were very early this morning to build what?
Yeah, we built, we took from our office, we took the play seat with an FreeSWARE host and a gaming PC to have an, what do you call it, internetless lab to prove that we can have a race simulator via the Horizon client.
And basically virtualize any application, right? That's the whole idea.
Yeah, everything is possible.
Why a game is like a shitty application to virtualize in general?
Yeah.
So why is that? Can you explain why it's shitty to virtualize? Because you did a session about it.
Yeah. I think, one of the main reasons is a game uses a high clock speed. It requires a high clock speed and just 2.8 gigahertz, like a data center processor or a CPU offers, is not enough. And another one is graphical acceleration.
Those Intel Gold processors who do 3 gigs plus.
Yeah, they do, but not at a really high scale. So sure, you can get like an Intel Xeon Gold 6254, which has a lot of cores and cores with a high speed. But a game like F1 2019 requires even a higher clock speed than, let's say, 3.2 gigahertz. That's still too low. So the higher the clock speed, the better performance of the game in combination with the GPU.
It depends, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the message here. It depends.
You think that's the main message on this performance? It depends?
Yeah, really. Yeah, I think so.
Doctor, I'm going to die. It depends.
Well, it's... Am I going to die soon? Soon is quite relative. So, sure. So it all depends. So Sydney, what's the main thing that you picked up here that you probably gonna, use yourself in the next week or what?
What I take from the event is mainly, I think I would rather advise a GPU in a VDI environment now, where I had still doubts 1 year or 2 years ago, where there still was a possibility to reduce the hardware acceleration within VDI or in your browsers and other applications, and that was still performs.
Right. A wise guy in a presentation said, but don't forget CPUs. You need them as well.
Yeah.
Well, wise. Tall yeah. guy with a beard.
Yeah.
We always calculated for VDI, you need at least 3 gigahertz processors from...
Yeah. Yeah, that's completely true. Especially, if you look at hospitals, EMR applications.
But those are graphic intense applications.
Well, no, they're applications that...
do a lot of calculations.
Yes, but also require a high clock speed because they're not purposely built for multi-threading. So they're single-threaded applications, require high clock speed. And nowadays, because... those applications generally use a work on physical workstation with a GPU. So you see that developers are using APIs exposed by a GPU to do some sort of graphical enhancement or use WebGL or something else within those applications to make them work. And that has a direct impact on VDI if you don't use a GPU. And that's what we're seeing at customers as well. Without a GPU, the general use of an EMR system is bad. User experience is bad. So, but it all, like Cindy mentioned, it all depends on the type of application, and you need, know thy application. That's, I guess, the best advice we're getting here as well.
Sure. If there is one thing you have to give our listeners as a tip. From this event, performance-wise, what would it be?
I think a good pre-calculation before you start your VDI, building up your VDI.
Yes, so it's a good sizing model.
Yeah.
Cool.
Really assess. I totally agree. That's knowing is measuring.
Sure. It's a Dutch saying.
But it's still true. And
measure twice, cut once.
Yeah, well, again, true. And we're still seeing, we are seeing customers that don't do a proper assessment up front, who can, for instance, benefit with VSI to do a sizing benchmark with the sizing of desktops. Like, you can predict the sizing, but validating is always is a good thing to do. But we're seeing that, if you do a sizing up front, a proper assessment, and don't size too aggressive, then your sizing on average will be the thing that you predict. So I totally agree with Sydney that you need to do a proper assessment up front.
Yeah, you will have less assumptions.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So
probably Sydney, less cost.
Yeah,
as well. Else you need to buy additional hosts, for example, if your sizing is wrong.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Sydney's... thanks so much for being here, and enjoy the rest of your day. And we'll definitely talk soon.
Thank you.
So Johan, I found the opener, or actually the opening keynote speaker.
He was the closer as well, right?
He was the closer as well.
That was teamwork. Oh, that was teamwork. That was definitely teamwork.
Can you tell our listener who you are?
Sure.
And what did you do today?
Sure. Hey, my name is Ruben Spruit, Dutch guy.
Yeah.
I'm a technologist at Nutanix. And what I did today is opening this great VDI performance summit. You can call it keynote. It's more like high level different, for sure. That's the feedback I got today, because I touched base on both the personal side of becoming Q in James Bond and the technology side of become Q in James Bond.
Awesome.
So what gave you the idea to take this perspective from Q? Was it the upcoming movie, or was it something else?
No, I just like the title. It's a little bit of... it's a good question. I have on OneNote, which I use once in a while to just look at new titles, abstracts, ideas. So this is like my sort of... scratch board where I have this all written down. And that's where one of the titles was... what I just shared earlier, become the Q in James Bond.
It's actually pretty fun to do. Just write like a bunch of titles down.
Exactly.
And just randomly pick one. And that's the title of your
That's how it works. Yeah. If I'm in a creative mode, which I need, if I create like this keynote, that's what I did like a week ago. Then that's, I turn on the music and watch the OneNote list. Mm-hmm. There are probably 300, 400 items in that list. Crazy titles, crazy quotes. And then I use that for keynote like this morning.
And most of the audience are probably not here at the VDI Performance Summit. What would you say what would you say that your keynote is mainly about, and what would be one of the main key takeaways?
Yep.
Actually, it's like twofold. To become Q in James Bond, or if you are already Q in James Bond,
but what if I'm Q right now?
Exactly. To stay Q.
Yeah.
That sounds a little strange. But is, in my opinion, two things. From a personal perspective, that's how I started early this morning. Everyone has its challenges. And today in the Instagram world, it all looks shiny and awesome, right? If you look at Facebook and Instagram, if you look at, for instance, my account, you see only the nice view.
Yeah, sure.
And what I shared is that side, like all kinds of nice pictures with my family and travel and holiday. But I also shared that everyone has challenges they're not tweeting about. So I shared my personal story briefly about my challenges. My challenges with travel and finding the balance, or mixing work and life, which is probably a better approach. But also the challenge I personally see, I would say, raising kids or young adults, and then the history of the connection with your own personal family. Or maybe someone else has maybe mental challenges or physical challenges or addictions you want to get rid of. Like, everyone has its challenge, for sure. So I shared a little bit of my challenges, which is not only travel, but also connection to family, and relate that to how I raise my kids. Because, like, what is your example? Well, maybe your dad or your mom is an example, or your uncle is an example. But what if that is challenging? What does it mean for raising kids? And I shared briefly about that. That's one side of the becoming Q, because if you're happy and you feel comfortable on many sides, that's a very important asset in like day-to-day work. And the second topic was about technology.
Yeah.
And people, of course, expect technology stuff here. I did not expect my personal touch like I just described. And many people came back after me like, hey, well, that was an interesting approach.
Actually, my next question, did you get a lot of positive feedback
yes,
from this?
Exactly. So people said, well, some of them too actually said, hey, I have this challenge. And that's triggered me to, I would say, solve that challenge, to connect with people, sometimes to, in one of these scenarios, find support, external support, to get rid of a challenge. So sometimes it just happens like this. If you open up, like I tried, people, well, it helps people. And that was my end goal, to share that story. Like, hey, everyone has his challenges they're not tweeting about.
And are you going to do this more often now that you shared your challenges?
Well, when the event is there. By now it was a keynote. It was not like a Nutanix event or something like that.
That might be strange when you're customer facing.
Exactly. When the occasion arises, yes. I did a video interview for Nutanix 2 months ago. I also touched base on this topic. I think it's important to share these things. Many people have challenges today, and with the Instagram, Twitter, Facebook world of view, it always looks as shiny.
You know, I think it's a great message, mainly because, like you said, the outside, social media is, you know, everyone there shares their successes.
Exactly.
Which is a good thing, but you don't know the story behind it. People tend not to know what, you know, the hard work everyone does behind the social media account is,
it takes a road before you get there.
Yeah.
Take bamboo, for instance. Bamboo grows for 4 years under the ground before it sprouts above.
Yeah.
And the part above, that's what people see.
Yep.
The part below, it doesn't.
Well, there's a nice book I shared at the end of this personal touch. There are three nice books I wrote. I did read a couple of weeks and months ago. Atomic Habits is exactly what you described. There's a lot of work behind the scenes for a long time. And then click at once, you see things happening.
Yeah.
And that's Atomic Habits. The other one was Unicorn Project, which is more about DevOps and security and operations. Great read. And the third book was Factfulness, also a very good read. And I combined these three books with a little bit of a personal story as the first part of the keynote. The second part, which was like 20 minutes, I would say like 70% of the time or 60% of the time, like the majority of time, was about what's happening in our space. And I touched base on seven topics and focused on five specifically. Desktop as a service, hybrid infrastructure as a service, application layering, remote user experience are like the most important ones here. And of course, Windows 10, I shouldn't forget that one. That's the fifth one.
Okay, nice. Thank you for being on our show.
Sure, yeah, great. Thanks.
Enjoy the rest of the event.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk soon.
Yep, thanks for joining.
Right, so we're still at the VDI Performance Summit 2020, and we found another guest and someone that's
probably the last one.
Yeah, and it's actually the one that I saw on Twitter. You were in Nashville like a couple of days ago, right?
I was in Nashville yesterday,
dude. And you're not even from the U.S., so you flew in to the U.S. from Britain, I guess,
from London,
and then all the way from Nashville back here.
Via Charlotte and London, but yes.
Oh, wow. So we have Jim Moyle here, and I would say that Jim is like an EUC legend.
He's probably jet-lagged.
I'm unbelievably jet-lagged, yes.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But that's okay. We'll go for it. I'm sure I'll make a load of sense.
Right.
This is going to be good, this last one.
Right. So, Jim, it's the end of the day. How did you experience the event?
So, it's a bit difficult to say because I literally got off a plane, got a cab here, and then went on stage for my session. So I didn't see the early ones of the day. And then I was on the panel session after that. So I can't say anything about the sessions because they were both me. So it would be really bad to say anything about the sessions. It's nice to see a good variety of vendors here because it's always important that the vendors want to come and speak to the people that are attracted to the event. The list of speakers was excellent. I'd say it's probably a bit parochial in terms of where the attendees have come from. A lot of them are from very local. I mean, there is quite a few who aren't, but I would say the majority are from the Netherlands. And I'd like to see that expanded to get a more diverse sort of European range of people here. But other than that, I mean, it's only their second go around, so I think it's great.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, we're actually, in the end, we're trying to have a big event that will span European-wide, maybe bigger, which is vendor agnostic. At least that's our goal.
Yeah, that's tight. So this is the EUC Digest, Digest podcast, and the podcast is part of a platform, basically. And one of the things that we're aiming for is organizing a vendor-agnostic EUC event in which, well, you were from Microsoft. And,
yep.
And well, I think you're, I won't say lucky, but you're probably the only vendor that is part of basically every stack of solutions that you see here on the show floor.
Yeah, so I've worked with vendors for quite a long time. So startups, and then the startup I was working for, FSO, just got acquired by Microsoft. And the big difference in talking to customers is there's no like, you know, do we have a relationship with you? No, Microsoft has a relationship with everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody uses Microsoft products. So that first step in going in and talking to the customer about whatever new thing you're doing, Windows Virtual Desktop, it's so easy. Because as you say, everybody uses Microsoft.
Honestly, it's I just thought about it, but it's quite weird that almost, outside of, or except for hardware vendors that are on the show floor as well, basically every under vendor has tried to solve something or solved something that Microsoft hasn't solved in their own solutions. Like VMware does
virtualization. So does Nutanix. Liquidware is here to do monitoring and application layering. I see monitoring vendors as well.
Control up.
Yeah. So what's your take on that? Because a lot is happening in the space, but
so Microsoft is a totally data-driven organization, and they have rules internally about what areas of the industry they should invest in terms of platform, in terms of niches, and they will look at all of this stuff. But they will have looked at monitoring, they will have looked at everything else, they will have assessed the addressable market. They would have assessed the engineering effort required to reach that market and the market penetration that would be possible by Microsoft in a certain time frame. If that doesn't meet the criteria, then Microsoft won't do it. And they'll go to either, you know, somebody new and say, hey, come with us, come be our partner, we'll give you access to our roadmap, we'll give you access to the engineering team. We want to help you be successful because we're definitely not going to do what you're doing. And, you know, the stuff that Microsoft doesn't want to do can be a massive business for somebody who's a smaller startup. It can be a super successful business. As you say, look at some of the vendors here. They've got good money coming in. You know, everybody's very happy. But for Microsoft, it's not the correct play for them. And that will be a topic that continues throughout the years, right? And it's why Microsoft so values and loves its partners, because it knows that it's never going to do these things that those guys are doing. So the fact that there are people doing it and making customers successful by filling those gaps is for Microsoft, is really cool, is something they value.
I think we can continue talking about this for hours.
But yeah. let's not do that. Definitely invite you over to another episode, a dedicated episode to what you are doing at Microsoft.
The takeover from Avis Logix and how that went.
Yeah, we'd love to know how that worked out, because you know what's your current role again at Microsoft?
So
it's like a ninja guru, something like.
Yeah, so believe it or not, on my contract, it actually says global black belt for Windows. Global black belt, yes.
Wow.
It's a very American term, but it kind of communicates the role, so I'm all right with it.
Wow. So you heard it here. Jim Boyle is the Microsoft ninja. Cool. Thanks, Jim, for being here, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you for being here.
No worries.
So, this has come to an end. Johan, did you enjoy the event?
Yeah, I think it was awesome. It's a great thing to bring, you know, so many different vendors and so many people from the community into one place and share knowledge, share, you know, the stuff that we like and share our passion for end user computing. So, yeah, definitely enjoyed it here.
Yeah, me too. Like, I hope you enjoyed this as well. And this.
Yeah, someone is bringing bitter balls to
bitter
the place.
So
yeah, we. Do you want a bitter ball?
No.
Oh,
I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is, you know, it's 5 o'clock. We have drinks.
And everything, and we have to talk in a closure. So, again, thank you all for listening, as I hope you enjoyed this extra snack. And Johan, I hope you enjoyed your bitter ball of EUC in the right amount for your appetite.
Absolutely.
If you have anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on our social channels or by email on podcast@eucdigest.com. Cheers, love, and rockets.